Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to music mogul and star maker Dr. Matthew Knowles about his new book, Racism from the Eyes of a Child. He stopped by Upfront this week to chat about the inspiration behind his new literary offering and a chance encounter with the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that changed his life. Upfront hit the road this week and participated in a roundtable discussion with the cast of Bounce TV's dramatic series, Saints and Sinners. Actors Clifton Powell, Demetri McKinney, Jasmine Burke, and Trey Chaney all weigh in on the show's third season and what fans can expect. Actress, producer, and reality star Christal Wilson takes us back down memory lane and celebrates the 20th anniversary of the Players Club. Wilson stopped by to chat about her unforgettable character, Ronnie, and her newest TV projects. This is an Upfront exclusive you won't hear anywhere else. Upfront also commemorates the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with songs that embody freedom, justice, and equality. But first, here's Reva with this week's casting buzz and entertainment news.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Central Casting is looking for extras to portray movie theater patrons for the new OWN series, Love Is. The males and female actors must be between the ages of 20 to 60 and have never worked on the show. They cannot have any visible tattoos and must be able to work on Monday, April 9th and Tuesday, April 10th. If you are available, please submit your name and a current photo to loveis@centralcasting.com with movie in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, check out the trailer for Magnolia Pictures' upcoming documentary, The Gospel According to Andre, at WCLK.com. It chronicles the life and career of the former Vogue magazine editor at large and one of the fashion industry and New York culture most influential icons, Andre Leon Talley, beginning his career at Andy Warhol's factory in the 1970s before climbing the ranks of the New York fashion editorial world. Talley made a lasting impact by pushing to include African-American models and designers in such major publications as Women's Wear Daily, W, and Vogue magazine. The Gospel According to Andre opens in select theaters nationwide on April 27th. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the 82nd Annual Atlanta Dogwood Festival, April the 13th through the 15th. This year's festival includes artist booths, live entertainment, a kids' village, and 5K run. The Backyard Bites and Brews is also back. Information and a full schedule of events is available at dogwood.org.
Hi, this is Iyanla Van Zandt, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Oh, well, oh, deep in the sky. Somebody's broken heart and a washed out feeling. They follow the pattern of the wind, you see. Cause they got no place to be. That's why I'm starting with me. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his way.
My first guest made her film debut as the arch-enemy to Lisa Raye's character in the 1998 film The Players Club. I'm talking about none other than Christal Wilson. The actress, producer, and reality star made quite an impression with moviegoers as the brash and bold lead exotic dancer, Ronnie, and cemented her place in cult classic movie history. Check out our conversation as she talks to me about her iconic character and how she got the role of a lifetime.
Well, welcome back to Upfront, Christal Wilson. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. Right. Thank you for having me. Hey.
You know I had to bring you back. This is a big year for you. 1998.
Yes.
Is when, not when, you know, in our minds we think that's when it all started, but you were kind of doing some things a little bit
before then.
But yeah. We're talking to Christal Wilson, one of the lead characters in the cult classic film Players Club, 1998. Iconic film. Yes. And you guys are celebrating a big anniversary this year. It's the 20th year for this film.
Like, I can't even believe it because it's people that I talk to, young men and young women, who are like 22 and 23, and they're like, oh, my God, that's my favorite movie. And I'm like, ooh, you were two when it came out. That feels so weird because I still feel, I just don't feel like 20 years have passed. Yeah. Honestly, I don't.
So let's go back to that time. How did you find out about this film? Because this was really, I'd say, the first film of its kind that focused on the African American female exotic dancer experience.
It is. It was very taboo at the time when the film was, you know, getting written and coming out. And how I found out about it is, see, I really wanted to be a rapper.
Okay.
And I really wanted to be a rapper. What was your name? I had a few.
Okay.
So I started out with Sha Fresh. So that tells you how long ago I started out. Anything to start with Sha, honey. Sha LaRock and, you know, that was a while.
Right.
And it stood for sexy, heartbreaking, and fresh. Okay. Remember that. No, but then I changed it to Wicked. And just, who knows what else, yeah. You know, Lady C, I mean, whatever. But I was fortunate enough to open up concerts for NWA when I lived in Northern California. So I did a few little concerts for them. And I was like, okay, when I moved back to Atlanta, I said, okay, I'm going to be a rapper. That's it. Like, I'm going to be Lil' Kim before Lil' Kim came along.
Right.
And Ice Cube was going to a listening party here in Atlanta that E-40 was having. And so I was invited and I was like, I'm going to find Ice Cube, remind him that he knows me from doing these shows with him and that I'm still pursuing a rap career now that he has this label. I want to be signed as a female rapper. So I go to the party, I bump into Ice Cube, he was looking, he's like, yo, you look so familiar. And I was like, yeah, you know, I used to, you know, rap and, you know, and I did a couple shows for you guys. And just, he was like, oh, he was like, yeah, you still rap? And I was like, yeah. He said, well, you know what, I'm doing a film about the strip clubs here in Atlanta. And so I'll be coming back and forth, so make sure I get your information before I leave. And we ended up just kind of the crowd and everything happening and just didn't cross paths again. And I was like, dog, there's my shot. So fast forward a few months later, I'm listening to the radio as I'm driving to my job. And they're like, yeah, Ice Cube's coming to town. And he's having these auditions at the Catfish station. And if you think you have what it takes to be the next Diamond, the next this, that. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is the movie that he was telling me about. So I went to work and I remember telling them like, hey, you know, Ice Cube is coming to town. He's having these auditions and I really want to go and see if I can meet with him because I want to, you know, talk to him about my music. So they were like, well, you know, we're going to let you get off the time off and go. So I go to the Catfish station. I have on a business suit because I was working at a law firm. Mm. It's because a lot of people say Ice Cube found me in the strip club. Not true. Makes for a good story. I have touched a toe in the strip club here and there, but he did not come get me from in there.
Okay.
But yeah, so I went to the Catfish station. The line was wrapped around the building, and I was like, okay, waited for hours, get in there, and they give me these sides for Diamond, and they say, okay, you know, when you get your turn, you're going to go up there, you're going to read for Diamond. I'm thinking, when I go up there, I'm going to see Ice Cube, and I'm just going to bust into a rhyme.
Mm.
Well, I get up there, and it's just like these three women sitting there. And it's Winsome Sinclair, who you probably know.
Yeah, we've had her on the show.
Yes. Kimberly Harding,
okay.
who's cast many of things, and then one of their assistants. And I'm like, well, where is Ice Cube? And so they're like, did they give you the size for Diamond? And I was like, yeah. They were like, oh, well, we're so tired of seeing Diamond, so go back downstairs. Now, this is after waiting, honestly, for 4 hours. Get the size for Ronnie and come back and see us in 15 minutes. So I was like, okay. I go back downstairs, get these size, and it says, Ronnie, tall, 6 feet tall, brown skin, cornrows, muscular build. That was the character description.
Wow.
I said, they're trying to set me up for failure. But the example of this, when something's meant for you, it's meant for you. I went back up there 15 minutes later where everybody else had hours. And I just said, you know what? I'm just about to just kill it. I'm just going to kill the audition because really, I just want to get to Ice Cube and rap. So I auditioned, but in the middle of my audition, I just busted out into a rhyme. And they were looking at me like, and I was like, either they're going to put me out because they think I'm totally insane.
Right.
Or they're gonna tell Ice Cube, sign this girl tomorrow. So I end up getting called back and they were like, do exactly what you did again. And then by the third time I auditioned, I felt comfortable enough asking them, like, where is Ice Cube? So they were like, well, he won't be here at the auditions, but we'll definitely share the tape with them. And then he ended up calling me one day at work. And the receptionist was like, you know, Ice Cube is on the phone for you. And I was like, girl, whatever. You are playing. And so I get on the phone. I'm like, hello? He's like, yeah, this is Cube. And I was so nervous, I just hung up the phone.
Wow.
I was like, oh, my God. And so then he called back. He was like, hey, man, this is really Cube. And I was like, hi. He's like, you killed it. Like, you killed it on the audition. And I want you to come to L.A. and, you know, audition for the other producers. And so then that's how that went down. Yeah.
Thank you, Christal Wilson, for that exclusive interview. And we'll be hearing more from her. But first, Upfront recently attended a media roundtable with the cast of Bounce TV's hit series, Saints and Sinners. It's the network's crown jewel and is one of very few Atlanta-based productions that features Atlantans in lead roles as well as writers and producers. Executive producers of the show, Eric T. and Keith Neal, as well as actor Clifton Powell, all credit the show's success to its homegrown talent.
The idea was for it to be as much homegrown as possible. We still have a job to give Jim the ability to market and bring talent from LA in, but the idea was always an ensemble cast, including as much locally as possible and building that up. Jasmine, I mean, just has killed it on the show. So it's like, for us, that was always the goal, and Bounce allowed us to do that, and we're instrumental in us being able to do that.
I'm going to add to that. You know, sometimes what happens is the talent levels can be off when, say, like on the play circuit, you bring in the Nationals. On this show, man, like I saw the quad last week. I'm looking at this show, the level of talent that they, like George and them bring in, it doesn't drop off. You know, the mother is murdering.
What is local show? That's the thing. George casting, I mean, yeah. It really, really is homegrown.
Yeah.
And it just felt right. Bounce is an Atlanta network, you know. So everything about it, you know, organically has become what it's become, and it's been great.
And also to piggyback that, it's just you have so much talent here. You'll see the cameos we have Kiki Wyatt. The year before, we had Kelly Price.
David Banner.
Kenya Moore. Candy Burrs. She played the nurse on here. So a lot of people live here, so we piggyback those situations. I'm just glad to be here shooting in Atlanta. So it feels good, and it is good.
Actors Jasmine Burke, Trey Chaney, and Demetria McKinney all chime in about being able to keep up with the pace of the show when they return to shoot for season 3.
I was going to say, for me, I guess, you know, being introduced in the first season, that finale, all the way up into second season, as the scripts were coming, like you said, fast pace. You know, you're going along with the flow, but when you get that one script, like how I got at the end of season 2, where he's buried alive, you kind of like, it's no certain type of way to really prepare for it, but it's, for me, I know I ask a lot of questions, like, you know, so am I going to make it back, or, you know, just
that's
trying to.
That's the first question you
ask. Yeah, that's the first question you ask, you know what I'm saying? So as far as, you know, just preparing and just being used to that fast pace as an actor, period. It's pretty a smooth transition and just preparing for it.
Go ahead, Jess. Being a part of the cast since season 1, I was used to the pacing of it, you know, the fast pace. So by season 3 now, I know Christy and I know my relationship with Tamara and with Miles and Levi and everybody involved. So it is easy to just jump right in because we know our relationships and connections now, and we know where the story is. So it's easy to get the script and say, oh, this is where we're going? I didn't see that coming, but okay, let's turn that corner and let's drive off the cliff. And that's what we're doing in season 3. We are driving off the cliff with no seatbelts on. I cannot wait for you guys to see the rest of the season. I can't wait to see it myself.
It takes a lot of trust. I think that because we have been in this, because the Bounce family has trusted us, the Swirl family has trusted us, we've all gotten to grow and learn these characters together. On top of the writing being really, really smart, Ty is amazing.
Yes, you
never have to come in and say, I hope I ain't gotta go to them and say, this don't make no damn sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, you really get to just immerse yourself in who you need to be in that moment and I have people around me especially that I know can carry their own weight. Nobody's mm-hmm. carrying anybody else. Mm-hmm. Everybody is standing on their own. Everybody's character has stretched in this season. Like, we really got a chance to flex on these, but you know yeah. what I'm saying? So yeah. it's been a really fun ride, but I think that without the trust that's been built as this family has grown, we wouldn't be able to do it as smoothly.
Saints and Sinners has been directed by a number of Hollywood veterans, including the show's leading lady, Vanessa Bell Calloway, and the one and only Russ Parr. Here's what Clifton Powell says about working with him and being able to try new things as an actor.
Russ allows you to just find your moments.
Yeah.
You know, again, for me, it's not like I played like that scene in Dead President. It wasn't easy for me to knock Lorenz down and say, he's one of my friends. You know, Russ, that scene in the kitchen, Russ just said, keep eating your chicken. It's not like I came up with that. I was eating the chicken anyway because I like chicken. Russ said, keep eating the chicken and just have fun watching him get beat up. And so Russ comes in every morning and those scenes with you and Jasmine and all of this stuff that we're seeing, we read it and we're seeing it for the first time like you all. We read it comes off the page. But Russ really allowed, because, you know, we actors, we've been doing this a long time, so we don't come in, we're not nervous per se, but we're trying to find those subtle nuances of the character. And Russ does so much great homework. When you have a great, that's why we use, like, Vanessa directed a couple episodes, but this season we had Russ. And you come in, and you can say, Russ, can I try this? And he'll say, you know what? Let's go to Ty and let's talk, let's try it. That helps us immensely. And I just wanted to throw that in there. It's amazing.
The WCLK Jazz Calendar is made possible by support from the Sweet Food Lounge. Pianist Christian Sands is on stage at the Woodruff Arts Center as part of the Atlanta Jazz Festival's Emerging Jazz Icon Series. Kari Cabral Simmons is at the Atlanta Dogwood Festival on Friday, April 13th at historic Piedmont Park. Vocalist Renee Marie performs at Georgia State's Rialto Center for the Arts on Friday, April 20th. And finally, Avery Sunshine, Layla Hathaway, Robert Glasper, and more are performing at the 2018 St. Lucia Jazz Festival, May 6th through the 13th. Also, WCLK's Jamal Ahmed will be hosting the Soul of Jazz from the festival. Information on travel packages are available at LT Travel Connections at 770-323-7118. That's today's Jazz Calendar. For these and more live jazz performances, log on to WCLK.com and check out the events calendar. I'm Reva Blue.
Hey, yo, peace world. It's the Love King Raheem Devon, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
That was the voice of Grammy-winning music star Beyoncé Knowles Carter performing her smash hit single, Freedom. She is the daughter of my next guest, music mogul, star maker, and professor, Dr. Matthew Knowles. He stopped by the Upfront Studios this week to discuss his newest project, Racism from the Eyes of a Child. It's a personal reflection on racism in America through his experiences growing up as a child in Alabama. Dr. Knowles also exposes colorism in the music industry and recounts a definitive moment he met and worked with the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Well, welcome to Upfront, Mr. Knowles. How are you?
Thank you, Ray. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful day in Atlanta. I'm so proud to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here in the Upfront Studios. Been watching you for a very long time. And I want to say congratulations on just all of your success and everything that you're doing. And we're really excited about what's to come.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And there's a lot to come.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Right now, we want to get into this new project that you have out, which is actually not music, but a book. We're talking about Racism from the Eyes of a Child. And you released this back in February. Yeah.
Yeah. Black History Month. You know, this is my second book, Ray.
Okay.
My first one was a number one bestseller at Amazon, The DNA of Achievers. This book is Racism from the Eyes of a Child. I grew up in Gaston, Alabama, which is only an hour and a half from here, 2 hours, 1952, Ray. Mm. And I never went to a black school. We're talking the 50s, the 60s.
Right.
I graduated in 1970. And so I'm telling my story. My mother is from a little small town, Marion, Alabama. She went to the same school as Coretta King.
Okay.
T.D. Jakes is from this little small town, Marion, Alabama. And my mother really took the torch when she moved to Gaston, Alabama, for civil rights. And so she really put me up front, because when you're a child, you know, you don't get choices.
Right.
You're told, boy, you're going to do this. And so I tell my story, but I think it's important because, you know, if we don't know where we come from in our history, then we don't have knowledge. And if we don't have knowledge, we don't have power, right? And one aspect of racism is to erase our history. We can see that with our current president. Every opportunity he can with President Obama, he's trying to erase what he's done.
Yeah. Now, when was the first time you were called the N-word and it really, you really understood it and it impacted you?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say I was around seven years old.
Wow.
You know, racism is mean, it's hostile. And again, I give examples of this throughout the book. I start the book by telling a story. When I was 5 years old, my mother went to Marion. We used to go in the summers, me and my brother. We just talked about my brother, Jesse. Yeah. And this particular night, my mother got really upset with my grandmother. So she chose that we were going to leave and go to the nearest relative at around 10 p.m. at night. Not a good idea.
No.
There's no lights on country roads, so we only had the moon and stars for light. But we saw in the distance these lights once we got on the main highway. And then we heard these car horns, and they got closer and closer. And the lights got brighter and the horns got louder. My mother just all of a sudden said, hey, we got to get in the bushes. And so she grabbed me and my brother by the hands, and we got on the side of the road and on the, you know, some bushes. And then she got on top of me as the cars got closer and started praying. I was crying. She was like, be quiet, be quiet. And then she told my brother, hey, if anything happened, you take your brother, y'all run on that barbed wire, and you just run that pastor with those cows. Just keep running. And then they finally, the cars passed, and that was a KKK rally. Mm. And that's why I named the book Racism from the Eyes of a Child. Because when you're a child, 5 years old, you always ask questions like, why? And so that's where it started for me. Damn. At 5 years old.
You mentioned colorism in the entertainment industry. We've seen that quite a bit over the years, and hopefully we'll get to a solution for that. So let's
talk about
that.
Well, when I first got into the music industry in the 90s, mid-90s, and I went to Sony, that's where we got our deal. You know, they had a black music department. Some labels call it the urban department. And that's where all the black artists were. The budgets were smaller. The marketing budget, the album budget, the advance that the artist got, they were smaller. And I noticed for a fact, because I had also some white bands that I managed, when it was pretty much double what they got. And so I chose, because I didn't want to get pigeonholed in just the black music department. I wanted to sell records to everyone. And so I had to fight that fight. But at pop radio, you've done this for a while, and you know, first of all, colorism is just discrimination based on someone's shade of color.
Right.
But if you look at pop radio, you don't see any darker complexion black females being played at pop radio. You know, I teach at Texas Southern University. There's 8 years in the entertainment recording industry management. And about 4 years ago, I had one of my classes research. In the past 15 years, there's nobody.
Mm. Wow. Now, this week marked the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And considering that you are from Alabama, was there ever a time that you got to see him speak?
Yes, I did. Okay. I know more, greater than that.
Right.
I had the opportunity to demonstrate with him. The largest demonstration ever was in Gaston, Alabama.
Okay.
It was when this white postman from Baltimore decided that he was going to deliver a letter to the governor of Mississippi. So he took a bus to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and then he walked. and he had to walk through Gaston, and that's where the KKK killed him. And the biggest and largest march of the whole civil rights movement was in Gaston, and I had the opportunity, like many others, to meet him.
So where can our listeners get the book?
Well, you can go to Amazon, Kindle, or you can go to my website, MatthewKnowles.com, and I'll sign the book and ship it back to you.
All right. Well, Matthew Knowles, thank you so much for stopping by the Upfront Studios. We're talking about racism from the eyes of a child. And again, much success to you, and you're always welcome to come back.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Alliance Theater, presenting two one-act plays by Atlanta playwright and book author Pearl Clegg. These plays follow Jenny Anderson at two points in her life as she deals with unresolved questions from her past and understanding for the future. Playing now through April 15th at the Southwest Arts Center. Information is available at alliancetheater.org/Pearl.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
Closing out the show is the rest of my exclusive interview with Players Club actress Krystal Wilson, who talked about the lessons she learned while filming as a first-time actress and how it helped her with her newest TV and film projects. So what was one of the biggest lessons that you learned as a first-time actress?
As a first-time actress, the lesson that I feel that I know even more so now is it's so important to have people that are at a certain level really rally for you. Because without that, I don't care how good you are, I don't care how cute you are, you will not really be successful without having a team or people that root for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. And that's still true today. Yeah, people that believe in you, which brings me to what I'm doing now.
Right.
With The Rich and the Ruthless, with Victoria Raul, the fact that she is just a crusader for putting content out there, really pushing for you, got me submitted as a nominee for an Emmy on a reality series. And like, when I saw that, at first when she said it, I thought she was joking. Mm. And then she sent me the link and she was like, yeah, this is the Academy. And I'm like, huh, what? This is real? You know, because she fights and she believes in what you're doing. That's so important.
Yeah.
Because without that, you're just a flash in the bucket,
yeah.
You know? So that's Rich and the Ruthless. Today is the Independent Awards ceremony today, and we're up for 8 nominations. So that's exciting for Rich and the Ruthless, which is on UMC Channel. You know I'm doing another Christmas movie, honey.
Yeah.
But TV, honey, from Marry Me for Christmas.
Right, that whole franchise.
Yeah, that whole franchise with Rhonda Baraka, who's incredible, and the cast is just amazing. Did another Christmas film.
Okay.
I'm just becoming just a little Christmas, little honey.
Yeah.
I'm just bringing what?
Bringing us a lot of cheer.
Just a cheer. But I just finished another Christmas movie that was directed by Terry J. Vaughn.
Okay.
And I'm just a new, bigger fan of her because she's just so dope as a woman. And so it's called Merry Wishmas, and that's going to be on TV1.
Yeah.
So that's coming up. Another Ayanla.
Okay.
Where we discuss colorism.
And let's talk about that because we were talking about that a little bit offline, but that is still a major issue in the African-American community, not just here in the United States, but really around the world, this issue of the lighter is better. So, and I'm sure you've had some crazy experiences of dealing with that in Hollywood. So let's talk a little bit about that.
You know, it's ironic that we still struggle with this. And especially with what, you know, the climate of things right now, that we're bickering amongst each other about who's better because of this color. Really? Like, the one thing that I think that I'm not going to say good, but the only thing that I could say maybe the silver lining to the cloud of Trump being in office is because we have someone that is really forcing us to come together as a community because we have a common antagonist in him. And so it's making us as a community, as Black people, come together and really bond together more, because that's stupid for us to say or think this person is better because they're lighter and this person is this because they're darker. My experience, because when I have my darker skinned people say to me, oh, well, your situation or you things may have been easier for you because you're fair skinned. I'm going to tell you, my experience has been with being fair skinned. Everything I get, people think that I slept my way to the top for it. And that could not be anything further from the truth. They think that it's easier for me, but I always have to prove that I'm smart and I always have to prove that I'm worthy. I feel that my brown skin sisters, they, you know, when they are in positions, certain positions, people say, oh, okay, she's intelligent. She earned her way here, this and that. And it's just almost kind of like a given. Or, you know, brown skin sisters, they're like, oh, okay, I don't mind taking you home to mama because you look like my mama, but I'm the side chick. You know what I'm saying? So the conversation needs to be had, because that's where all the healing starts. All the healing starts with the conversation. And so this episode with Ayala is powerful.
And this involves you as well as some other notables for this particular episode.
So Estelle. But Hazel E, it's about, you know, kind of addressing why she was let go from Love and Hip Hop because of some comments that she made on our social media. And Ayala wanted to have people take part in the conversation. I was surprised to get the call. I was like, oh my God, you're going to come. Of course I'll come. What are we talking about? I don't even remember. Yeah. I'll be there. I still need to be healed. Yeah. I have some areas.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's great, a great conversation. And, but it's sad. It's sad that it's something that we still deal with.
Well, Crystal Wilson, thank you so much for being a guest again on Upfront and taking us back down memory lane for this 20th anniversary of Players Club, and so much success to you. We look forward to the films that you have coming out, as well as the episode on Ayala Fix My Life. So much success to you.
Ray, you know I love you. You know, I said you'll always get the exclusive boo when I make it big. thank you for having me.
All right.
Well, that'll do it for today's show. I'd really like to thank all of my special guests, actress Crystal Wilson, Dr. Matthew Knowles, and the cast of Bounce TV's Saints and Sinners. I would also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, April 14th, for another exciting edition of Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.